You're listening to Around Comics, episode 177. From the campus of the Savannah College of Art and Design in historic Savannah, Georgia, this is Around Comics, the comic book culture podcast. I'm Jeremy Mullins, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Jarrett Williams.
What's up?
What's up?
It's Jarrett. It's me. Mia Paluzzi.
Hey there.
Oh. Rashad Doucet to the lady.
Oh, that's how I like it. Yeah. I got my shades. You guys can't see them, but I got them.
Nat Landry.
Yeah, baby.
And the illustrious Kevin Burkhalter.
Burkhalter!
You're a loser.
Coming up later, we'll be talking to artist Cameron Stewart. You may remember his stint on Catwoman with writer Ed Brubaker, the Vertigo Vietnam story, The Other Side, with writer Jason Aaron, or maybe his current work on his own serialized web graphic novel, Sin Titulo. But first, we need to mention that this episode is brought to you by
InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection, The Originals, to Around Comics listeners for an amazing 35% off the cover price. Get your copy today for only $11.69 for the soft cover or $16.22 for the hardcover. Not at all, man. Check out the Eisner-winning graphic novel by Dave Gibbons. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStock Trades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions,
Son of Galactus,
and more, all at a great discounted price. And remember that all orders over $50 ship free.
Goddamn! Free.
Yeah.
Awesome. Wait, free?
Awesome.
Free!
Later this week, the guys in Chicago will be talking about Sal's selections in this month's club. Be on the lookout for that.
As many of you already know, Chris, Sal, Tom, Scotty, and the regular Chicago crew will be taking a short hiatus from the show production. But don't freak out. We, the grad students of the Punch Lord Department and the Savannah College of Art and Design, have volunteered as fill-in artists to give you, the Around Comics listeners, something new on your podcast feed while the guys enjoy their break. They're all in Hawaii right now. If you like the show today, let the Chicago let the Chicago people know.
Chicago people.
Email them at chris@aroundcomics.com, or better yet, post a comment on their forum. Let them know how much you love us. We're recording today in Stately Norris Hall, located at 5...
It's stately and very pink.
And it's located at 548 East Broughton Street in Savannah, Georgia. For more information about the college and our various programs to study, visit www.scad.edu.
Represent, baby.
This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by me and Bizarre New World. The critically acclaimed series returns in a new prestige one-shot. After the first miniseries, the cat is out of the bag!
Meow!
Get back in the bag! The worldwide population suddenly gains the ability to fly.
That's pretty pimp.
Yeah, yeah. A desperate phone call from his son forces Paul Crutcher to run the gauntlet of insanity to get to Arizona.
I really like that game, Colin.
Yeah.
Dude, how am I getting to Arizona?
Yeah, from the enemy, baby.
But with chaos ripping across the planet and everyone airborne,
my Cloverfield.
Yeah. The journey through California won't be easy. It never is. Find out why. AintItCoolNews.com called Bizarre New World, one of the best new comics of 2007.
Gotta buy it.
Yeah, pre-order your copy of Bizarre New World. Population Explosion from the February...
That's the coolest name of the
year. Yeah, like the coolest thing ever.
The February issue of Previews. And to purchase the original three issue miniseries, head to your local comic book shop or visit us at www.apecomics.com.
Real quick, I also want to mention that we're joined on the panel today by Mr. Nat Landry. Give him a shout out, Nat. Tyler Nickum.
Oh,
what?
And Mr. James Hornsby.
Oh, yes.
Now, without further ado, here's our conversation with comics creator Cameron Stewart. You may remember his stint on Catwoman with writer Ed Brubaker, the Vertigo Vietnam story, The Other Side, with writer Jason Aaron, or maybe his current work, his own serialized web graphic novel, Sin Titulo. Today, we've got Cameron Stewart on the phone. How you doing, Cameron?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing great. Welcome to Around Comics, and welcome to our forum. We got a couple questions for you.
Sure.
Okay, cool.
Is it me? All right. I got to lean in here. Cameron, so what was it like working with Ed Brubaker on Catwoman? It was kind of before Ed kind of blew up on Captain America and stuff, so I heard he was a good person, but I want to know what was your experience on that.
My experience working with Ed was really great. He's a fantastic writer, obviously, and I think, actually, he and I have had some of the most collaborative process that I've had working with a writer, because I think, you know, with Catwoman, he was just starting to get into superhero comics, mm-hmm. I can't really say that I was, you know, more experienced at it than he was, but we were able, I think, to have just kind of be able to play off each other and experiment and try things, and one of the things that I found really satisfying about working with him was doing action sequences.
All right.
Because he would give me a lot of leeway with that. He would write stuff. He would write an action sequence, and I'd read it, and it would spark an idea. I would go, wow, you know, this is cool, but it would be a lot cooler if this happened. And I would then go ahead and do it. And at first, I think it was funny because he reacted negatively to me changing his scripts and putting in my own ideas. But I never really changed the intent of what he was writing. You know, I would never, when I'm working with a writer, I never actually will alter their intention for the scene. I just feel like if I have a way of expressing it visually in a way that's more interesting to me or that I think will make a more dynamic or exciting page, that's my job. I think that's my responsibility to do that. So he was, I think he was generally pretty satisfied with the stuff that I would bring to the table. And after a while, it was funny because he would actually stop writing action scenes. He would just say, okay, put an action scene here, something cool, and just let me go and do whatever I wanted, as long as it fit within, you know, the two pages that we had for that scene. So it was really fun. It was really satisfying. I learned a lot. It was my first major comics work, and it was a fantastic experience.
Oh, nice. Do you find, this is a spin-off question, do you find that, is that working like people like that all the time? It can be collaborative like that, or is it like a little bit harder depending on the writer you're working with?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
I'm sorry, do you find collaborating like that, does that work with every writer you work with, or has it been like, you know, that was just a special occasion where you guys really meshed really well together?
It depends. I mean, when I worked with Jason Aaron on The Other Side, his script was so good and so tight that I didn't really feel like I needed anything new to it, you know, everything was there, and his script was particularly good for being so evocative. When I read it, I was able to visualize the images in my head without even, you know, much thought. They just kind of popped into my head just from the power and the beauty of his writing. So with him, I actually kind of illustrated pretty much what he told me to, and I never really felt like it was wrong or that I needed to fix anything or change it. Working with Grant Morrison is another story entirely, because I have enormous respect for him as a writer.
We all do, dude.
And a lot of his scripts are very, very difficult and very complex and involve a lot of things that are really, really heady and intellectual.
Sounds like Grant Morrison.
Really Express. And so when I work with grants, as I've done several times, it's really difficult and it's quite intimidating.
Wow.
And, you know, I did a couple of pages of The Invisible near the end of the run, and, mm-hmm. and actually for the trade paperback collection, the final trade paperback collection of The Invisibles, I did three pages that had been originally done by Ashley Wood in the monthly serial comic, that when it came for the trade paperback collection, Grant had decided that he wanted them redone, and he asked me to do it. And this was a sequence that had been described in the script as the single most important sequence.
No pressure.
And, it was... They are the single hardest pages I've ever had to draw, and I don't even think that I nailed it. I know that he was happy with what I did, but it was incredibly complex and the kind of thing that, you know, I'm not convinced could be done with mere pen and ink. You know, it needs a couple of $1 million worth of special effects to do. But it's always really satisfying working with Craig. I mean, it's very intimidating and far beyond, you know, what most writers will ask for in a script, but it's always a challenge, you know, and that's one of the things, like when I worked on Sea Guy, one of the things that I really enjoyed about working with Sea Guy was that every single page was something new, and it wasn't something that anyone had drawn before, you know, not something that I'd drawn before, but not something that anyone had drawn before.
Well, that's cool.
So, it was a continual creative challenge, and I felt like that kept me energized, you know, because every couple of pages it was something new, and it was a new set of problems to deal with, and really made it interesting and fun to work on.
Nice.
Now when you were on working on the other side, you actually went over to Vietnam, right?
Yes.
And did you go over specifically just to do some research, or were you going over anyway, or?
No, I went over for research because when I finished Sea Guy, I was talking with Karen Berger at Vertigo. And she was asking me what I was interested in doing next. And I didn't really know. I said, well, you know, what do you got? And she said, well, we have this script. What's about the Vietnam War? Would you be interested in doing that? And my first response was no. Like, immediately was no. Because I didn't think that I had any connection to the material. I'm Canadian. that's the thing. I was, you know, I'd seen some Vietnam movies when I was younger and so on, but I don't, you know, it's not as part of the Canadian collective consciousness in the way that I think it's part of the American collective consciousness, you know?
Yeah.
And I was born the year the war ended, so I didn't grow up with it or anything. So I felt a distance from the material. But Karen said, you know, you should read the script. It's really good. I keep wanting to say screenplay. It's not a screenplay. It's a script. She said, you should read it. And so she sent it to me. And about halfway through the first chapter, I was totally sold on it, just because it was an incredibly powerful script and really, really beautifully written. As I mentioned earlier, I mean, in reading it, the images would just come into my head. I didn't even have to sit and try and sketch them out and work them out. So,
yeah, your images were gorgeous. Let me just go on record right now that the reason we called you today, you're my favorite cartoonist right now. Hands down, dude.
Oh, man.
Hands down. And your work on the other side was just off the chain. And I'd like to just say thank you, personally.
Thank you. Jerry's fanboy moment.
But what was it, man? What was it like going over there? Like what was...
You know, one of the single best trips that I've ever been on, but this is why I went over, is that I felt like I didn't have a connection to the material, and Jason did, because his cousin was Gus F. Hansford, who wrote the book that Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket was based on.
Yeah.
A book called The Short Timers, and he's written the Phantom Blooper and a couple other Vietnam novels, and Jason, you know, obviously when reading his scripts, he knew his stuff. He really knew the material and had a personal connection to it, and so I felt kind of intimidated by that. But at the same time, I really wanted to be a part of it. So I thought that, you know, looking at Google and renting Apocalypse Now wasn't going to do it.
Right.
So I thought, well, I love to travel, and I can write it off on my taxes, so I might as well go over to
That's Canada. Always good.
So I went over, and at first I was really kind of nervous. I left from the San Diego Comic-Con. I went to San Diego, and and did, you know, the couple of days there, and then I got on a flight and flew over to Vietnam, and I didn't really know what to expect. I was really nervous because I was going over on my own, but once I got there, it's a country of breathtaking beauty, and the people are really, really amazing, and so friendly and helpful, and I was there for 3 weeks, and it's amazing. You know, I would go back again in a heartbeat, because I felt like I never really, even though I was there for 3 weeks, I still kind of feel like I didn't quite see as much of it as I wanted to. You know, I kind of felt like a stone just skipping across the water and never really getting deep enough. And, I would go back, and I would recommend it to anybody to go. It's a fantastic place.
Thank you. Mia?
So, Cameron, I've got a question. A lot of us here, most of us here in this room are all sequential art students, and along with being fans, we're really big process people. So I know a lot of people are kind of curious here. When you sit down to work, how do you approach the page?
How do I approach what, sir?
Like, how do you approach penciling, and how do you approach actually sitting down and turning out a page?
Okay,
what Mia's asking, she's basically asking about your process. How do you approach a page when you get that script? What's your order from script to finish?
First thing that I do always is read through the entire thing, get a sense of what the story is and where it's going. And then I start at the beginning, and I usually work really small. And I do thumbnail drawings and just kind of work out all the storytelling first. I tend now to draw in marker rather than pencil, because I find that if I'm drawing with a marker, the lines are permanent, and I have to. It stops me from doodling. It stops me from kind of sitting there and trying to, you know, finagle the lines and make them perfect. If I'm just scribbling down with a marker, what I'm doing is I'm just blocking in shapes and getting the storytelling right, the composition right.
What kind of marker?
I use these Faber-Castell tip markers that are really amazing. They're kind of a felt tip marker that has a flexible tip on it, like a brush, so you can get a nice thick line, or you can get a thin line depending on the pressure. It's like a brush, and much cleaner, and the ink is really nice, so I buy those. I literally go to the store and I buy like a year's supply. A drawer full of them, just hundreds of them.
That's why I can find it.
So, you know, once I do that, once I'm satisfied that the storytelling is there and everything's where it needs to be, then I'll I start, you know, going in and refining the drawings and working out the compositions a little better and the, you know, the actual rendering. And I have kind of a strange process. I mean, I use my Lightbox a lot as well, and I end up Lightboxing my roughs into a second set of roughs that are maybe slightly cleaner than the first set, and then maybe I'll do that process again until I'm satisfied with them, and then once that's done, then I scan them into the computer, and I'll make whatever digital fixes are there. Like if I have a character whose head is maybe a little too large, or the perspective is slightly off, or whatever, I'll go in with Photoshop and I'll lasso whatever elements need to be moved and shrink them or enlarge them or shift them around. And then once that's done, then I turn it into a blue line. So I delete all the layers except for the cyan layer and print it out on the board, and then I have a nice light blue basis that I can draw right over. And then at that point, I've drawn the page so many times that I don't really feel the need to pencil anymore, and it keeps the drawing vital if I just go right to ink, because, you know, a lot of the problem when you're drawing something over and over again is that the drawing will end up getting kind of cold and stiff because you're just, you know, redrawing the same thing, and it loses that vitality that you can get when you're drawing, you know, for the first time. It's a problem that I have all the time where I'll do a rough sketch for something, and it's so often so much better than the final drawing because there's a life to it, because you're just throwing it down on the page for the first time. So I find that if I go right to draw right in the ink rather than penciling it all out so tightly. It keeps the spontaneity and the vitality to the drawing, which makes, you know, hopefully makes it look more alive and more exciting to the eye.
Oh, cool.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Cameron, this is Kevin. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay, cool. I wanted to ask you kind of about the Royal Academy of Illustration and Design, your studio. How did that come about, really? Like,
how did it come about?
Yeah, like, are these all, like, friends of yours that are in it, or...?
Yeah, it started, we've had a change in the members over the years. I'm the only one that was here from the very beginning. And how it started was myself and a couple of other local illustrators met for drinks one night, and we were just talking about our work and complaining about things that we like to complain about and all the things that we had in common and so on. And the thing that kept coming up was that everybody was sick of working from home because it's really solitary, it's really lonely. And,
Amen,
bro. You work in a vacuum and you don't get that input that's really nice from having a fellow artist look at your work and offer their opinion on it and so on. So, we were sitting around having beers and talking about how we all hated working from home and wouldn't it be great to work in an office the way that other people did? And, you know, it was just kind of a short jump to go, well, why don't we get a studio together? And, so, yeah, we found a pretty great studio space that just luckily happened to be, like, right in the center of where we all lived. So it was kind of an equal distance for everyone to travel to, and it's fantastic. And, you know, over the years, people have come and gone. One of the guys moved to Japan, one of the guys got married and had a kid and so on. So they have all their various reasons for leaving. But every time somebody left, we have somebody new in. And amazingly enough, you know, Toronto is... a city that has a surprising amount of comic book artists, and it's never been difficult to find someone to come in. And not only a surprising amount of comic book artists, but a surprising amount of really, really good, really talented comic artists. So I always feel energized that I'm sharing the space with super talented guys.
Yeah, what's up with you Canadians? First it's the Arcade Fire and music, and now it's you and stuff in comics. What's up with the Canadians? Like, get all good and stuff. What's up with that?
Yeah. Taking over the world.
And our dollar's worth more than yours. Oh!
Burn! Thus concludes our interview.
All right, Cameron, can you hear me? This is Jared.
Hi,
I want to ask you kind of a weird question. A lot of our American viewers might not be familiar with Sky Sweetnam, who's like this Canadian pop rock singer, kind of like the Britney Spears of up there.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
More like Avril Lavigne.
Yeah. She has a kind of like dark vibe to her. I just want to know how that came about, because you had some work on her website I saw on her front page, and in her videos, actually, for the song Human. So I want to know about that experience. Like, how was that for you?
It was really cool. I wish I had a better story to tell you how it came about, other than a friend of mine directed the video and asked if I would do the artwork for it. And he had an idea. He said, I want to do this kind of... Apparently, Sky was really kind of into Tank Girl. She just recently discovered Tank Girl and was, you know, wanting to send something like that to the video. And Sean, the director... asked, he was like, hey, do you want to do some artwork for it? And so it was a really rushed job. I cranked it out in like a day.
Wow, nice.
Because the video had to be done and on the air like by the end of the week.
Jeez,
dude.
But it turned out pretty good. I was pretty happy with it. And then the record company actually was so happy with the video that they asked if I would do some artwork for the website. So
nice.
That's how that happened.
Awesome.
But, yeah, it was cool. It was fun. I like doing things like that. Pushes me in different directions and opens up, different avenues of the media. It's a cute girl. I like to draw.
Yeah, but I say, man, it's a hot chick.
Can you introduce me?
Yeah. No, I'm first.
So Cameron, when you're not drawing comics, what do you like to do?
Aside from that, I don't know. You know, it's funny. I kind of looked back on the last couple couple years of my life recently with a kind of a regret that I haven't really done that much else. At the end of the day, you know, I'm so exhausted. I go home. I probably shouldn't admit this in case any of my editors are listening, but after a long absence, I've really started getting back into video games a lot.
Yes.
So I've been playing a lot of games.
What you been playing?
Yeah.
What's that?
What you been playing?
I'm a huge, huge music game fan, so Guitar Hero.
Playing for us, baby.
I don't know, I've been playing Super Mario Galaxy on the
nice.
BioShock on the 360. A lot of stuff.
That's good, man.
Have you got all 120 stars yet?
I've been doing a full day's work before playing the game.
You should ask again, Jared.
Yeah, have you got all 120 stars in Mario yet?
No, I'm at like 87 or something, and I put it away. After, you know, I finished the game, and then I put it away, and I'm going to come back to it so it's fresh again.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I got a question for you. Like,
sure.
How did you get involved with comics? I mean, have you always had a love for it? How did you know your interest in the medium then translate into you getting work? How did you break in? Could you tell us the story of, I guess, your rags to riches story, so to speak?
Sure. I don't know if it's rags to riches. Rags to slightly less filthy rags.
Come on now, you got the Guitar Hero money. Come on now.
Sure, I guess I've always been interested in comics ever since I was a kid. When I think back, you know, I was always reading comics, and I think it was sometime in mid-high school that I realized that, you know, I could probably maybe make a living at it, or at least try to make a living at it. And so I would draw a lot, and, you know, I drew my own comics, and I copied a lot of drawings from existing artists and pretended they were my own. And I guess it was in 1999, I was working two retail jobs. I was working in a comic book store, and I was working in a video store. And then in my off hours, I was going home and working on comics for myself, for portfolio. But in 1999, I went to the San Diego Comic-Con for the first time, and I brought a portfolio with a little mini comic that I had written and drawn, and self-published. Well, I say self-published, it was like photocopied and stapled.
self-published.
That's self-published, man.
That counts. So I brought that, and I had, you know, like a portfolio of DC comic characters. You know, I had some Batman stuff and some Wonder Woman drawings, you know, Superman. And I brought them to San Diego and showed it around, and I was a huge fan of The Invisibles at that point. And at San Diego, I met Grant Morrison.
Nice.
Just by virtue of standing in line waiting for his autograph.
And, well played, sir.
When I got to the... Actually, you know, it's funny. I met Grant Morrison for the first time when I was 13 or 14 years old. He did a signing for Arkham Asylum at the Silver Snail Comics in Toronto. And I stood in line waiting for that. And, I remember kind of saying, I was 13, I remember saying, like, wow, I'm going to do this someday, and I'm going to... And then, sure enough, years later, I ended up, you know, I've worked with them three times now, so...
That's nice.
It's kind of a cool story. Anyway, so, I was in San Diego, and I was talking to Grant, and I showed him my portfolio, and I was going through, and I had some Invisible drawings in there, and he was quite taken with them, and suggested that I talk to his editor, who was Shelley Bond. And so I found her, and I showed her my work, and she really liked it, and she gave me her card, and said, you know, we'll talk. And it was great. I didn't even have to fly on a plane home. I just floated home. But then came about maybe about three months of nothing, where I didn't hear anything, and I was just kind of giving up hope, and thought that, you know, they were just blowing smoke. And then I got a call, and they said that, you know, they had a job for me. And so I was all excited, and I was like, what's it going to be? Batman! It's going to be Batman. And it turned out it was going to be Scooby-Doo. So, you know, I was a little disappointed, but it's a job, and I'm not going to complain.
Girls in sweaters.
So anyway, it turned out that the Scooby-Doo story was about a haunted baseball diamond.
Yes.
I hate baseball.
Oh, you're trying to be all American man, man.
Me too, Cameron. That shit is slow.
I'm not a sports guy at all, so I was kind of not interested in drawing a sports-related story, and I had to do all this research with baseball costumes. uniforms, not costumes. And, So I screwed it up royally. It was like a 12-page story, and I think I was like 2 weeks late with it. I thought my career was going to be over right away. But fortunately, I think they recognized that I was young. I was really young. I was like 22. And eventually, I got some more work, and then I started, I did a couple of pages for The Invisibles, and then I started inking, and I was working on Dead Enders with Ed Brubaker, who's the inker on that book, and it was through that connection that I ended up doing Catwoman. Okay. Because he really liked my work on Dead Enders, and also I was sharing a studio at that time with Dolan Cook, who did the first few issues of Catwoman with Ed. So it was just kind of a natural thing where I managed to slide into that Catwoman position. And I know, I've been lucky, I've been really lucky that every time I finish something, something else comes along and I can just kind of slide along and
well, that's good, man.
Put food on the table.
Definitely. I have another, this is like a fun question, I guess. My question is, do you have any good, like, or any most interesting thing that ever happened to you at San Diego or any other Comic-Con or a con adventure, if you will?
Anything interesting that happened to me in San Diego?
Yeah, like a funny anecdote or anything.
We're looking for con stories.
Yeah, con stories.
Things that happened, I don't know if I should say them on the air.
Oh,
yeah. You should say them on the air, absolutely.
The one that won't get you in trouble.
Yeah, any of them that won't get you in trouble.
I don't know. I nothing that particularly stands out. The thing about that show is that it's such a blur. Like, I go there, and I don't know if any of you...
Why is it a blur?
No, I try to go every year, man, so yeah, I understand that.
It's a great show, but it's honestly, it's like 5 days of just kind of being on crack. Just everything blurs together. I can't even, I'm exhausted all the time. I can't remember what happens from one day to the next. I always get back on it. I try and think of specific things that happened,
No, man, no, it's good. That's good, man. That's
well, cool. Well, let me ask you about Scene Tutulo. How do you say it? Let me ask you.
Well, I pronounce it incorrectly. I pronounce it Scene Tutulo, but that is technically incorrect. The Spanish speakers will tell you that it is Scene Tutulo.
Okay, cool. So I wasn't too far off then. I love it. I love what you got going on. I mean, that is just a bizarre... I mean, I'm on the edge of my seat, like, every week. Can you tell us about Transmission X and how you hooked up with that project and how long you envisioned the story going and how you even decided that kind of thing was something you were going to work on?
Well, okay. First things first, I guess, the TX stuff started, again, with a group of local comic book artists just kind of talking and complaining about our jobs and, what we hated about it. And again, one of the things that we always, I make it sound like we're really miserable and we hate our jobs, and we don't. But there's obviously things, little annoyances that pop up. And one of the things that always kind of came up with everybody was that, we wanted to do our own work, not work for hire, not working with a writer, not working with them. We wanted to do something that we created, that we owned. Because when drawing comics becomes your full-time job, unless you're already working on something for yourself, if you're working for a company, if you're working doing work for hire stuff, it sucks up all your time, and you don't actually get the time, at the end of the day, after, spending 8 hours working on something for DC, my energy is gone. I don't want to sit and then draw another 4 or 5 hours, on my own stuff or whatever.
Right.
It can be really draining. So we were just kind of talking about how we all wished that we could have an excuse to do our material. And so, naturally, we thought, well, what would what would work the best for that. And self-publishing is expensive and risky. And, you know, we're lucky we live in a time that has the internet and web comics are taken off. And
hear, hear. You're talking to the webcomics class here at Scaz. You're talking to the right crowd.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I do firmly believe that the web is there's a very, very bright future for comics on the web. So, and the other thing that struck us about, I should actually point out, I'm making it sound as though I was one of the founding people of this, and I actually wasn't. I came in later. Everybody had already been talking about this, and I threw my hat in afterwards. But
who had started? Who's the fathers, so to speak? Like, who put it together?
It's actually funny because a couple of the guys who were the original, the people who thought of it originally, aren't part of it anymore. They ended up going off and doing other things. There's a guy named Eric Kim who has done some books for Pony called Love the Foreign Language. And Kalman Andrzejewski, who's done, he does covers for DC and a couple of other short things for them. Ramon Perez, who works on Kookaburri. He does Kookaburri and his other comic, Butternut Squash.
Butternut Squash, that's right.
They were the ones who, I think, first put it together, and I came on later, and, you know, we got a bunch of other guys. And so, anyway, I kind of lost my train of thought. So we thought that, you know, putting comics on the web would be an easy way to do it and get it out there. And one of the things that struck us about webcomics is that there's a lot of webcomics. If you look, there's like something like 3,000 of them. A lot of them. But only a small percentage of them. I'm sorry, I might offend some webcomics creators here, but, you know, there's a very small percentage of them that are kind of professionally done.
Yeah, no offense taken here. That's what we're working on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Say it again.
No offense here. That's what we're working on.
Yeah, okay. But, no offense intended. I mean, a lot of people just do it for a hobby or whatever. It's not their profession. But we thought that something that we could do would be to have a kind of a collection of webcomics that were of a professional standard, that were, you know, really kind of well drawn and well written and apart. And it's our goal to kind of be of a professional stance and kind of be the number one webcomic site and kind of lead the way.
Now, you publish every Sunday, right?
I'm sorry?
You publish every Sunday, right?
Yeah.
And then what was the idea behind your story? Like, how did it come around?
Well, I'd originally started with something completely different. I was going to do, when we first started planning our individual stories, I was originally going to do something else. It was going to be a kind of an Indiana Jones, Lara Croft kind of adventure action thing that was going to be my tribute to the old newspaper serials like Johnny Hazard and Steve Canyon and that kind of thing. And I sat down and I tried to write a full script for it, and I ended up drawing, you know, the first 5-7 pages of it. And but I found that I was getting really hung up. This is the first kind of major thing that I've ever written, and I found myself getting really hung up on making sure that the script was like this perfect clockwork precision. Every scene would set up something much later in the story, and I got really intimidated and overwhelmed by it, and it ended up being not fun to work on it. And that was, you know, the number one thing when we started TX, is it was intended to be something that each of us would really enjoy doing. It would be a fun thing for us to do. So I abandoned that idea, and what I instead decided that I would try to do would be something that was a little more open and that was a little more experimental and improvisational, and be something that I could, in essence, make up as I went along, which would keep it fresh and keep it interesting, and I wouldn't get plagued with the terror of having to plot out my entire story in advance. And around this time, I had seen Inland Empire by David Lynch.
Oh, nice.
Which is, for me, an astonishing movie. I really was affected by it. And I had read a lot about it. And one of the things that I read was that he, it was largely improvisational. He was shooting it and kind of, you know, making it up as he went, and he would arrive on the set with new script pages for the actors that he'd written the previous day, and the actors were trying to keep up with it. And it was just allowing the subconscious to drive the story. So I was really impressed with that. And in the case of Inland Empire, when I saw it, I was like, wow, this is fucking amazing. It was, you know, for something that sounded like it should have been a complete mess, it ended up being, again, for me, a really powerful and effective film. So I wanted to do something like that. And so I came up with the title, Sin Titulo, which literally means no title, in Spanish, because I'd seen it on a painting years ago, and I liked the way it looked. I liked the word, you know, the S-I end at the beginning. I thought that it was kind of a nice-looking word, and it just has a nice sound to it, and so, but it didn't have any great meaning. It just was a kind of a placeholder title. And so again, around that time, I found out that my grandfather had passed away.
Oh man.
And not quite as it happens in the script, but very similar to it, where I found out that he'd been dead for well over a month and that I didn't know about it.
Oh,
sorry to hear that, man.
Sorry to hear that, brother.
Yeah. And I, you know, I felt horrible because if I had been closer to him, I probably would have known that he died. And it just made me reflect a lot about, you know, my life and my closeness to people and everything. And so I thought that it would be an interesting way, possibly, you know, since I was going to take this experimental and improvisational approach to the storytelling, that it might be an interesting way for me to create something really personal and, you know, maybe work through some guilt issues or whatever. So I use that as the inciting incident for the story. And there's actually a lot in it that's autobiographical. Not the dream sequence, the flashback with the lead character Alex telling
right.
the story of when he was a kid. Quite kind of a horrifying story. There's like a thing in the bedroom, and he sees his father, you know, fighting with his grandfather and so on. That story is 100% true.
Wow.
And it happened to me when I was a kid. It's actually three separate stories.
But, see, and that's where you hooked me in the story, too. Like, when I was reading along, that's when I was hooked. Like, that part's pretty powerful.
The reason for that is because it's the most honest and sincere part of the story, because I'm literally, you know, I haven't even changed the names of my family members there. I mean, it's like, it is exactly 100% true. Even the monster in the bedroom, I saw that fucking thing when I was a kid. And it's three stories that I conflated into one event for the purposes of the script. But it's a true story. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things all the way through. Obviously, there's fictional elements to it, but there's a lot of things in that story that are drawn from my own life. And because I'm not going to say that I'm making it up entirely as I go. I mean, I do have a vague idea of the plot structure. And, you know, I know where it's going to end up, and I know certain things. But there's a huge amount of leeway for me to take elements from my real life as it happens and work it into the story. It's already turned out, you know, where the story is now is so much different than what I anticipated it being 6 months ago when I started. And it's just because things have happened in my life that have turned up in the script as well. And so in a way, it's funny, because when I go back and when I read it, it, in a lot of ways, it's like a diary of my life for the last, you know, 6 or 7 months. And I think, you know, I mean, I think that's why I connect with people, is because it's very honest and sincere.
Now, where can people find your story? What's the URL that they can find it at?
The easiest way to get to it would be to go to www.transmission-x.com and then look for Cintro.
I love that name, man.
And then also, when you're there, please look at all the other scripts there. I think every one of them is excellent and deserving of being read.
Do you think you'll continue with online publishing in the future? Like, maybe doing a you know, longer graphic novel kind of a thing on your own outside of the Cintillo?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I'm sorry, do you think you'll continue with the web publishing? Like, you know, even more so than maybe the mainstream stuff that you've been doing?
Yeah, I think so. I'm enjoying it. I like the immediacy of it. I like putting stuff out there and having a reader response immediately. It keeps me going. I like the format of it. I think all of us are thinking of when we eventually finish our respective stories, we will then, you know, make a print edition for permanency. And, you know, there's a lot of, all of us get comments.
You mean like an anthology with all your old stuff?
We talked about that, but I think the more likely thing is that we'll probably just publish our individual stories as separate books, but with, you know, the TX brand in the corner or something to keep them a unified identity. But, I think it's difficult to do an anthology book because you have things like Ramon's Kookaburri or by Spencer Planet or Charles Christopher where it's, you know, they're very kid-friendly. And then you have something like mine,
right?
Or Andy's Raising Hell, which has, you know, a lot of mature content in it. So putting it together under one cover makes it, you know, it's already kind of iffy because we're on the same website, and we actually are working on TX 2.0, where we're going to implement, you know, like a rating system and so on and so forth to have people be more aware of what the content is, because I think one of the strengths of our lineup is that we do have a wide variety of material that's suitable for all different age groups, but, you know, you run the risk of someone coming to the site who is a kid who really likes Kookaburri, and then, you know, finding Cintillo and it being, you know, kind of inappropriate for that. So, but I think, you know, once I finish Cintillo, I'll probably look to do another story, and I'll probably keep doing another web. It's great because it allows us to, or allows me, but I think it's the same for all of us, to kind of trick ourselves into doing a book. Because if you sit down and you go, I'm going to draw a 150-page book, that's very daunting, and more likely you just won't get around to it. But doing it this way, where I go, okay, I'm only doing one page a week, and one page a week is very easy to manage, and we have a deadline set up where, you know, I have to post mine every Sunday, and at the end of, you know, it's funny, I look at my art drawer, and at the end of 7 months, I got a big stack of artwork that I probably wouldn't have done if I just decided to sit down and try and do a book and start to finish, you know. So it's, there's a lot of benefits to working this way, and I definitely think I'll continue with it.
Yo, Cam, can you hear me?
For now.
Okay, I got a loud voice. But first off, I like to say, I like your selection of movies on your MySpace page. It's pretty awesome. Bam. But second thing is, on the real though, all jokes aside though, is that a lot of people don't realize how stressful it is, you know, whenever you drawing comics or whatnot. So my thing to ask you is, like, if there was ever a time in your career that you felt like you were just about to just break down and just say, fuck it, you know what I'm saying? I'm about to just, this shit is not worth it. You know, I'm about to go ahead and just do something else. And if so, you know, how did you overcome that if you did, you know, like, have those types of issues come about?
I only caught about half of that, but I think the question was, comics is really stressful, and did I ever feel like I didn't want to do it anymore, and how did I get through that? Is that right?
Yeah.
There's times. It's very trying, and it's a hard job. It's a hard job, and in a lot of ways, you know, very very little reward. We get paid if you're working for, you know, one of the companies. You know, the money you get paid is not that great in comparison to doing, you know, commercial illustrations for magazines or whatever. So at times, you know, the work to reward ratio is pretty small, or pretty great, I should say. There's been times when I've wondered if I wanted to keep with it, and, you know, or if I wanted to go and just, you know, do commercial illustration instead, or anything. But you stick. I don't know. I, I stick with comics because I really enjoy it. I enjoy doing storytelling. I enjoy. I don't think I would enjoy working doing magazine illustrations nearly as much.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
the stuff that I would be illustrating, I wouldn't really have an interest in. You know. I've thought at times that I would like to explore doing movie storyboards or video game concept art or stuff like that. And I'm totally open to that. If that happens to open up for me, then I'll definitely do it, because I think that it can't hurt. I think that definitely, you know, you want to do as many different things as possible in your life to develop a really broad skill set. But well, I think I'll always keep coming back to comics just because I feel like it's something that I really enjoy doing, you know, and I like storytelling, and I wanted to do, you know, when I was younger, I wanted to do movies, I wanted to be a film director, and then I realized how difficult it is to do that, and how comics is kind of the same thing, but a lot more manageable.
Yeah.
And so I think I'll stick with it.
Awesome, man.
That's pretty cool.
It's a love, baby. It's a love.
Yes, love.
Well, now, Cameron, is there anything we should keep an eye out on the horizon for from you or anyone in your studio?
Yeah, right now I'm working on a full-length graphic novel for Oni Press called The Apocalypse Fix, which is best described as Josie and the Pussycats crossed with Mad Max.
Yeah!
And it's my friend Ray Fox is the writer and I'm the illustrator, and their characters will be created together. And we've done a couple of short stories with them that appeared in a couple of sort of small press anthology titles. And Oni Press saw them and actually asked us if we would want to do it as a full-length book. So I've been working on that, and that will be coming out in July. It's going to make its debut at this year's San Diego.
Sweet.
And we'll be out shortly after that. And hopefully, you know, we have an eye on doing that as a series of books. It's going to be like Scott Pilgrim style, and hopefully we'll have a run of, you know, several volumes of it. It's really fun to work on. It's really satisfying working. I'm in a really lucky spot because at the moment, most of the stuff I'm doing is stuff that's, you know, my creation or co-creations with other people, and that's really exciting. So that's the next big thing that's coming out. I have some other stuff that is still in the planning stages, and I can't really talk about it. What else is coming? Andy, who did Raising Hell on TX, or who does Raising Hell on TX, has the last issue of Friday the 13th, the series, is coming out soon. He drew that. Ramon, who does Kukaburi, has JSA Classified Wildcat. It's a three-part series that's coming out soon. Scott Hepburn, who does The Point, is working on Star Wars Knights of the Republic at the moment. All good stuff, all worth looking at.
Nice.
So go to your comic store and ask them.
Cool. Oh, yeah. Hey, I got a quick one before you get out of here, Cameron. Are you now? This is for a hardcore fans here, but are you anything? Have you anything to do with Final Crisis and Grant Morrison that's coming out with DC soon? Like a side story or back issues or, you know, something back?
I don't know. I have been talking with Grant about doing something, but I don't know if it's going to be anything to do with Final Crisis or anything.
Cool.
Yeah. Only by virtue of the fact that I haven't talked to him or anybody else involved in that. So
okay.
I'm not sure what that project is. I think if it's going to be like 52 or Countdown, and what's going to be coming out weekly.
Well, I don't know. I think it's a mini series, but who knows? Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Oh no, we were just gonna thank you for joining us today and sharing time with us, and
yeah.
And we hope to have you back at some point.
Please.
You'll have to come down for a Comics Art Forum here sometime in Savannah.
Oh yeah! Don't get drunk! Go to the hang fire, baby! We'll hang out!
Thank you very much for joining us today, Cameron.
Thank you for having me. Thanks, everybody.
All right, Cameron, take care, man.
Thank you, Cameron.
Good luck, dude.
So that concludes our talk with Cameron Stewart. What'd you think, guys?
That was awesome. Oh,
yes.
Very awesome.
What do you guys think of those other side books right there?
I know one thing. I know you loved them.
They're really good. And the thing I liked about it is that he kept it real.
He really kept it real.
Yeah, and I mean, the part, you know, where he's talking about, and I know if the listeners out there have checked out Sin Tutulo yet, it was one of the webcomic recommendations a couple weeks ago. But if you haven't seen that scene where he's talking about where basically his dad is beating the snot out of his grandpa, that's a heavy scene, man, and it definitely hooked me. I love that title, and I love his dude's work.
That's good stuff, man.
That seems like a train wreck, too, because even if, not in a bad way, but even if you're not into that kind of storytelling, you can't stop reading that. Like, you just keep clicking through to see what happens. Yeah.
Mastered that, man. Good stuff.
Well, it looks like we've already gotten some listener email. We're piping into the computer lab over in 204. What have we got there? What have we got, Kevin?
I've got a few bringing up here on my browser. Okay, we got one. Dear Around Comics.
That's us for today.
That's us for today.
Around Comics, the new class.
Hey, let's keep it Canadian. It's Degrassi, okay?
Dear Around Comics, if you ever want to see your kids again, bring a suitcase filled with $1 million, one Capri Sun, and an issue of 118, The Ultimate Spider-Man, to Forsyth Park at midnight tonight. Come alone. Magneto.
Who sent that? Who sent that? Wait, we have any more from our listeners over in 204? Well, get a little preview before everybody else?
Yes, Jeremy, we do. It's this one here is pretty creepy, but in a loving way.
It's creepy and loving?
Yeah, creepy and loving.
Kind of like my admiration for Cameron Stewart.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. Break out the hot loose.
You want to switch seats with me?
No. It's not good when your students want to flee.
Check this one out. Hey, Around Comics. Kevin.
That's
you.
That's me.
Kevin.
What?
Kevin is the best host ever.
Oh, man.
I don't even know who else is on the show because it should all be about Kevin. Why can't it just be about the Kevin's comic show?
Wow.
Signed by...
Thanks, Dad.
Not Kevin.
Thanks, Dad. I'll call you tomorrow.
That's completely surprising. Yeah. I don't know who could have sent that. Yeah. Must be a friend of Kevin. And speaking of friends.
It's not the same way you talk about it, though.
Did it slide?
That was so awesome.
We want you to join our friends of the program. Go to www.aroundcomics.com where you can download and print out our LCS challenge flyer. Ask your local comic shop manager or owner if they'll display it in their store. If they do, send us an email and we'll mention you in the store on the show as well as post it on our site. Become a friend of the program today.
Please do. And also, since you're becoming a friend of the show, you should check out our podcast. Go to the podcast section of iTunes and leave us a review. Christopher Niesman really loves these. If you've left a review already, go make a new screen name and need another one saying how awesome the staff is. And please, we need it.
Because he beats us if you don't.
You don't understand his classic. Please.
I want an A in this class. I want
an A. We're getting graded for this? Oh, my God. I'm failing already.
And lastly, this episode was sponsored again by InStockTrades.com. Now, they're offering this month's reading selection, the originals, to Around Comic listeners for an amazing 35% off the cover price. So go ahead and get your copy today for only $11.69 for the soft cover or $16.22 for the hard cover.
There's nothing soft about me.
The Cameron Stewart.
That's what you call hard cover.
Check out the Eisner winning graphic novel by Dave Gibbons. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. Hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions,
omnibus, son of Galactus,
son of Galactus,
and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship what?
Free!
And you know we like free. Give us more free.
And we are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, please visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809.
And if you're feeling the love for the Savannah crew, you might want to check out what's going on here at SCAD's Sequential Art Department by visiting our blog, sequelab.com. It's a sequential art testing ground for the SCAD students, faculty, and alumni. Find department news, information on upcoming events, and get feedback on works in progress. And also learn more about the department visits and guest artist appearances. Log in today. Go to www.sequelab.com.
And that's SEQALAB.com.
Yeah, what happened to the U in there?
I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. That's our official course sequence, you know. SEQA in the catalog. Yeah. That's sequential art. So it's
thank you.
You know, thank you.
We
thank
knows
you.
How to spell.
Actually, thank you. I came up with that. So minus
back
five.
To the dungeon for you.
Wow. Minus five. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today, and thanks for the Savannah College of Art and Design for hosting us as they have to. Everyone have a fantastic week, and in the meantime, we'll be everywhere in...
Around Comics!
Expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production. Copyright 2008.